This is Pop Health Week on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm Greg Masters, your co-host and executive producer. Joining me in our virtual studio is co-founder and principal co-host Fred Goldstein. Fred also wears the hat of president at Accountable Health, LLC. Pop Health Week is your go-to platform for peer-to-peer conversation with industry leaders, innovators, and ecosystem stakeholders, including payers, providers, patients, vendors, and the regulatory community. We come together to swap the best ideas and strategies in population health management. Connect with us via www.popupstudio.productions or drop me a direct message on Twitter via @GregMastersMPH, and that is Greg with two G's. You can reach Fred direct via Twitter @FSGoldstein or www.accountablehealthllc.com. On this episode of Pop Health Week, we feature Dr. Zev Neuwirth, a healthcare executive whose most recent role was clinical executive for the care transformation at Atrium Health, and Keelan Swain, the CEO and co-founder of Explosion Technology. We discuss AI uptake and how innovation can matter. And with no further delay, Fred, the mic is yours.
Thanks so much, Greg. And Zev, Keelan, and Doug, welcome to Pop Health Week. Welcome, Zev.
Hey there, Fred. Glad to be here.
Howdy, Fred. Happy to be here.
Howdy to you, Keelan and Doug.
It's great to be on Pop Health Week and be able to talk about the AI revolution will not be televised.
Fantastic. And with that lovely intro there, Doug, we're going to talk about this workshop coming up, The AI Revolution Will Not Be Televised. It's a participatory workshop catalyzing community revitalization, jobs, better health, and ROI, held April 10th through 11th at Beharry Medical College in Nashville. This workshop will be bringing together leaders, corporate and government investors, and community change makers to share know-how, ideas, and approaches in using AI, technology, and human ingenuity to power community revitalization and better health outcomes in underserved communities plagued with persistent poverty, food insecurity, and a lack of economic opportunities. So with that really cool idea for this workshop, why don't we turn it over to you first, Zev, and talk a little bit about your background and the book, Beyond the Walls, Megatrends, Movements, and Market Disruptors, Transforming American Healthcare.
Well, thank you, Fred, and thank you and Doug for having me on. I'm really excited about participating in this upcoming workshop. And in part, I think it's because the reality is that healthcare disparities are the number one issue in healthcare today. I can't think of one other issue that is as important from a ethical perspective, a clinical and public health perspective. And what's increasingly being demonstrated is from an economic perspective, and that is both from a macroeconomic perspective. The affordability of healthcare in the United States of America will not be solved, cannot be solved unless we eliminate healthcare disparities. And from, I would say, from a microeconomic perspective, as well as organizations try to thrive in the emerging market in healthcare. So super excited to be part of this workshop and to be part of this conversation. So my background, traditional physician, internal medicine, primary care practice for over 15 years, and then began to transition into what might be called manager and executive roles. I've been a chief medical officer. I've been a chief clinical executive. I've been senior medical director for population health at one of the largest healthcare systems in the country. And also have done strategy and care redesign for many, many years. As that was going on, I began to realize probably a dozen years ago that despite all the amazing people in healthcare, the brilliance and the science and the technology, and I think just the dedication people put into it, despite all of the amazing things going into healthcare, we weren't getting any closer to solving the major issues. Costs were getting worse. Quality and safety was not getting better. Access, convenience was not getting better. And as we were talking about, health disparities were actually getting worse. And so I saw that. It was data-driven. It was obvious to me over a dozen years ago. And so I began to diverge a little bit, even though I was following what looked like a very traditional career in a hospital system or in different hospital systems. I began to interview divergent thinkers and doers. These were very, very different healthcare entrepreneurs and bold visionary leaders who were really going about it in a very different way. And I've been doing in-depth interviews like that for literally a decade. Not only do I do the interviews, I record them, I transcribe them, and I study the transcriptions. I don't know anyone else who's as crazy as me in doing that. But the craziness is that these people are successfully transforming healthcare in their own ways. And out of those hundreds and hundreds of interviews, I've distilled a pattern, if you will, which I ended up calling the Reframe Roadmap, which I published in 2019 in my first book. And then during the pandemic, as I continue to interview these folks, what became apparent was they all had the same strategy. And it was a three-part strategy. And I began to test it out. And sure enough, it just every single person I've interviewed has followed this. And so I wrote a book about it called Beyond the Walls. The metaphor is this notion, and I stole this from a very, very successful entrepreneur. But the notion was that you know, legacy systems are very much like medieval dark age cities. They're walled off, and that really stifles creativity, innovation, commercialization, community culture. And so we need to get beyond the walls and literally beyond the walls of our current hospitals and healthcare centers. We need to get beyond the walls from a market business perspective, and we need to get beyond the walls conceptually. And that really was the three-part strategy. It is a overall humanistic goal or mission, a humanistic consumerist mission that is enabled by digital technology and by business model transformation. And again, I could share obviously dozens and dozens and dozens of examples, which are in fact in my book. And they're, you know, examples of individuals to small companies to mega companies like Amazon. They all follow the same strategy. And I think it's a very hopeful strategy. And I wrote the big book because I'm really hoping that healthcare leaders will read it and will begin to adopt this more humanistic consumerist strategy, again, enabled by state-of-the-art digital technology and state-of-the-art business model transformation.
So, Zev, could you give us an example? I mean, I've got 40 years in healthcare, banging my head against the walls, trying to get change. And as you talk about, it's a walled system, and you almost have to break them down just to get inside to try to do something. So could you give an example of one of these cases?
Yeah. So, you know, one quick example, which we, you know, again, each of these examples you could spend quite a bit of time on. They could literally be a book on each one. But and this one, in fact, they did write their own book about this. This is the ChenMed, which many of us are familiar with. So here it is. And, you know, when you look at the older, sicker, poorer population in healthcare, we call them dual eligibles, Medicare, Medicaid. Typically, folks like that would be treated in community clinics, federally qualified health centers. Or if you're lucky, you go to an academic medical center and be in their clinic, seeing like a different doctor every time, or doctors in training. And, you know, that's the type of care you would get, which quite honestly is third rate. And I say that's in no way disparaging any provider. It's just the system and how we treat these patients. And the Chens, starting with the father who was a physician scientist, said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to treat these poor, older, sicker people, often people of color. They were in Miami initially, based in Miami. Said, I'm going to treat them like VIP patients. And so that was the profoundly humanistic and consumeristic strategy number one. Strategy number two was, he said, the only way I can do that is if I take Medicare Advantage. I need the funds every month so that I don't have to worry about having them come into the office or charging them more money or upcoding. I get a certain amount of money for every patient. I'm going to invest that money, and I'm going to do whatever I need to do to take care of that patient, whether that's going to their home, having them, you know, giving them money for a cab to come into the office. But the Medicare Advantage business model transformation was critical. And the senior Dr. Chen was one of the first actually to pull that off and do exceptionally well. And by the way, achieve quality scores that were in the top decile compared to all other people serving Medicare and Medicaid and dual eligible patients. And then the third part of the strategy is the, you know, this isn't just a humanistic provider group taking Medicare Advantage. They began to apply state-of-the-art digital technology. They created their own electronic medical record system, state-of-the-art. In fact, they actually created a tech company. This is a separate freestanding tech company called Curity. It is one of the top mid-sized tech companies in the country. And they designed it and developed it and built it specifically so that they could adopt the best technology to provide care to these patients. So they identified patients in need ahead of time. They were doing predictive analytics before anyone else could spell that. And they were getting their patients to come in ahead of time. They were using evidence-based algorithms so the doctors didn't have to like look up stuff as they were seeing the patients. They provided hundreds and hundreds of these up-to-date evidence-based algorithms directly in their electronic medical record system. And so again, exactly what I just said, humanistic transformation, business model transformation, and digitally enabled care. It's just, you know, again, one of dozens and dozens of examples of the way the future of healthcare has to go.
When you say business model, a quick question, Fred. I don't know if
my go right ahead.
I'm entertained. I'm tuned in. When you say business model, them taking Medicare Advantage, it sounds like there was some. It don't sound like they were just on a typical fee schedule. Did they negotiate any, you know, any novel business modeling from a value base? Maybe they took a little bit of risk on. I don't know if they did full risk, but that was a very interesting notion.
Yeah, Keelan, you're spot on, and I apologize if I wasn't clear about it, but you're 100% correct. They took full risk capitation,
global cap,
Medicare Advantage, and they were doing it, you know, again, you know, years before most of us were aware you could do that. Actually, the senior Dr. Chen was really a pioneer in demonstrating that you could take full capitation. If you delivered good care, you could actually, you know, do the right thing for patients and do well. And so, yes, but you're right. And when I say business model transformation, it could be things like payment, which is critical, but it could also be things like partnerships, novel partnerships, or nowadays platform technologies, where you don't have to build everything yourself. You could partner with people or put other technologies or businesses in your platform. So, you know, I think this, we're seeing all kinds of new partnerships in the market. I mean, healthcare systems are partnering with payers. They're partnering with retailers. The whole partnership between providers and VC venture capitalists. Now, again, I know there's some caution and I know there's some hesitation and not all of it is good, but some of it is actually really good. And I think that, you know, I think it's these novel business model transformations coupled, again, the key is, and this is key, critical, if you're not being led by a humanistic goal, and we could, Keelan, I know you're very focused on this. If we're not led by a humanistic goal, and we can get very, very specific about this, this isn't like just a vision statement or a mission statement or some ad you put on the side of the bus. You need to actually make this a very, very serious goal with key metrics and your strategy and tactics that are really focused on humanism. If that's what leads you, then the business model transformation and the digital transformation really could get us out of the mess we're in right now.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And that whole idea of global capitation, you know, there's some others really early that we actually interviewed on the show years ago. Roy Hinman up in St. Augustine went globally capped in 1999.
Oh, wow.
That's about 30 some odd thousand in that broad practice he's built out. So really a great example.
For those just joining us, we're in the company of Dr. Zev Neuwirth, the healthcare executive whose most recent role was chief clinical executive for care transformation at Atrium Health, and Keelan Swain, CEO and co-founder of Explosion Technology. Stay tuned for the rest of the story.
Now, Keelan, you've got a digital tech company trying to disrupt an area. Talk a little about what you're doing.
Yeah, so I'm in the diabetes space specifically, and why would Zev, what he said, what matters to me is the largest opportunities we've seen has been partnering with the Chins of the world. I was writing his name down as you was talking about Chin. That's a good guy. The Chins of the world who are setting up these novel programs that may be more multidisciplinary and taking more full capitation to know what we're doing. But so you know how their patients end up in the emergency room for high risk diabetes complications. And it could be due to, like Zev said, access to hospitals or access to preventive services or trapped in food deserts. And so our focus is helping those patients take control of their diabetes by constantly screening them. Like now, I think most mandates have to screen for social determinants of health every 6 months. But, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't want to screen every monthly or biweekly to make sure those gaps are closed. And then two, training the family members, or we call it circle of care, on how to manage their diabetes. So nutrition literacy, how to cook at home, how to shop better, and as well as just learning how to eat better as well. So that's all done programmatically through education and content through the mobile application. And as well as some other things to gamify or change habits. So far, we've been able to get a 70% adherence rate on our patients. And the top metrics for us have been med adherence. So in a big metric in the Medicare world is like they have diabetes and statin. Like those are diabetes and hypertension medications, but you know, statin medication has been a big one. We primarily target the people who have insulin, are taking insulin. And as well as another key thing that we're learning, because we're directly targeting providers, is we want patients to fall back in love with their providers. So like, for example, I got on this train of getting to diabetes. This is my third company in the past 7 years. And other things were in tech and sports. I played college baseball in college. This is what really got me into digital health. Mm. I went to the Prairie View A&M University. But with this next venture I want to do, I want to do something a little bit more impactful. So my dad was diagnosed with diabetes 3 years ago, and he went to his nutritionist. His nutritionist told him, like, hey, you know what you should do to turn around your diabetes? You should eat more kale. My dad looked at the nutritionist and asked the lady, you know, what the hell is a kale? And then, but he did, you know, the nutritionist didn't realize that he understood what greens were. And, you know, that and on a nutrition world, it has the same high levels of fiber, high level of protein as a kale does. And it can help, you know, keep your blood sugars from spiking very fast if you're eating dinners or you couple it with your meal. And so that's when we know there's a huge culturally competent gap. And if you just look up nutritionists as a professional career, I mean, you know, unfortunately, it's not a very diverse area. I think it's 90% Caucasian woman, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, that's not, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that group or that group of area being leading in the area. I just think it can create a gap or disparity in information mm-hmm. when it comes to changing behaviors. And so I know there's a huge push to like make healthcare more diverse, but that's one of the repercussions. But once I saw that issue, I saw an opportunity. And the funny thing is, we started to, like, my dad found out he can eat more greens. He's eating greens for about 6 weeks straight because he's a diabetic, but he didn't he was one of those guys that actually, like, his problem was just more like lack of information and like being socially isolated. So once you gave him a go, he worked hard on it. But the issue is, you know, he got tired of eating greens, right? And so that's another part about managing disease. We give people diets and then you get tired of eating the same thing over and over. You lose taste that you used to having. And, you know, you're back yo-yo dieting, back with your went on. Mm-hmm. Thing, while we got into more family-based plans, is my mom. So once my mom, she's the cook, she also got trained on a diabetes program. And most of this was done digitally, which is one huge lesson learned. Like it wasn't a ton of going to see the main specialist in our field is someone called endocrinologist. You know, mm-hmm. it wasn't a ton of endocrinology assistants, just because when you have type 2, you know, you see your physician maybe every 6 months. So you have to be your own educator in a sense. It's one of those type of diseases. But my mom got trained specifically on diabetes management. So, and we found in Texas, a good grocery store to go to is like HEB. And so like we literally went through HEB and, you know, changed our eating program. So when you go in the pantry, when you go in the refrigerator, the things that we have access to in the home area significantly changed. And so, and it's small things that compounded over time, like, you know, changing the type of chips we buy. So they're like, there are smart chips that are, did a low, I have a list of foods. That's a whole, I have a list of foods that because my mom was a cook for the house and she knew what everybody likes, that's a whole great phenomenon that we learned. If we can kind of, you know, have her go through like, hey, here are some options, and she tests it, she can like be a great predictor okay, this is what the family were like. And so like we're eating protein chips by Quest now because they're really good and they keep your blood sugar low.
And this is all in your app and your program that you run. I think it's called Greens.
It's called Greens. Yeah. That's one of the major parts of the programs. But some of the cool things we did, like we got a government grant from the National Science Foundation. I just like to shout them out. They don't pay me to shout them out. But we got an SBR phase one. I tell a lot of innovative companies to look into non-dilutive grants. How to like, you know, so how to add this, how to add innovation into your project. And so what we created was a culturally competent image recognition algorithm. So you might have seen my Fitness Pal before. And my Fitness Pal, you can go in a grocery store or you can search up foods and get the macronutrients, protein, carbs, fibers, and things of that nature. And on the app, you can take a photo of the meal and, you know, and we trained it to like, to actually track things like pork chop, cornbread, collard greens, and things of that nature to help close that information gap. And so
you made your app culturally competent.
Yeah, made the app culturally competent. So that was a big push. And that was one thing we saw in the store. I mean, one thing we saw in the marketplace, because we were just trying everything to change my dad's behavior. And that was one gap that we saw. And other nuanced things, but that was one big gap that we saw in the marketplace around that area. We've just been building on that ever since that theme of culturally competent. Yeah.
That's great. So, Doug, we have these two coming to this work group. Tell us more about the AI revolution will not be televised. What's the whole thing going on there and who's coming?
Well, first, we have a call to action song, so that's exciting. And it was inspired by Gil Scott Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. So this is really, the conversation here is exactly what we want to have at the event. Community changemakers connecting with investors and corporate leaders, because one of our sponsors is the Consumer Technology Association. And they sponsor the big CES show, worldwide technology show every year. And it's Renee Squashy, the VP of Digital Health, mentioned that that grass top leaders, meaning investors, were not investing in the right grassroots change makers. And that actually came out of another change maker. And he corrected me, he didn't come up with that, but a gentleman named Pastor Jason Coker, who's building coalitions to address these issues in five regions across the country that have had persistent poverty and food insufficiency for a long time, along with Esther Dyson from Way to Wellville and the work that Keelan's doing and Zev's doing. These people are convening with investors and corporate leaders to figure out how we can better connect the grass tops with the grassroots in a workshop format. And we're going to have a visual journalist. So one of the facilitators is this extremely talented visual journalist. So she's going to create a 4x6 mural of the roadmap that people are creating. Mm. But she also has developed an AI agent who's going to develop their version of it. So we'll be able to see a human mural of the roadmap that the changemakers like Zev and Esther Dyson and Keelan and Samara Maskey from Fuse Machines, who's been publishing extensively in Forbes on how AI and technology can be used to lift up the people in underserved and disadvantaged communities. So I'm excited about this conversation, and it's not a sit and listen event. It's like network, listen, have a conversation, contribute your ideas, contribute your solutions. In many ways, we're trying to get many of the people that Zev's talked to in the same room to figure out how we can do some leapfrog innovations to help companies like Keelan's and others accelerate their development and accelerate their spread so they can serve more people in more places. And it's not, better health is clearly a part of it, but more importantly, it's about economic development and jobs and empowering mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. with the new, it's not just technology, but it's human ingenuity. Like you said, Fred, it's how do we take AI? You know, AI is like a hammer. I can use it to build a house, or I can use it for a breaking and entering. We got to help. Absolutely. We got to help each other and catalyze change in communities. This is not about different interventions. This is about how we create systemic grassroots change with people in community.
Yeah, and I really want to thank you and all of you for coming together on this. I think it's just a fascinating area we've been talking about for a long time, and particularly with these new technologies coming in, we hear all these companies going to set up an AI product. We're going to use an AI product here for this, and AI from a company perspective, which is showing success, like you talk about, Zev, with ChenMed and being able to predict analytics, or what you're doing, Keelan, with your grains and the AI you're using in that. But it's also about, I think, the opportunity to put AI in the hands of individuals, whether that's to help them better understand something because it's written at a certain level or in a certain way and they use different terminology, or to be able to respond to healthcare by using AI. And I think there's some examples we'll discuss about that as well. So really looking forward to this work group. The AI Revolution will not be televised April 10th through 11th at Meharry Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'd like to thank you, Zev, and Keelan, and Doug for joining us on Pop Health Week.
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you.
Awesome as always, Fred.
And back to you, Greg.
And there you have it, folks. That is a wrap for today's broadcast. We want to extend appreciation to our worldwide listeners for tuning in, and our deep gratitude to Dr. Zev Neuwirth, a healthcare executive whose most recent role was Chief Clinical Executive for Care Transformation at Atrium Health, and Keelan Swang, CEO and co-founder of Explosion Technology, for sharing their insights today. If you find our Pop Health Week content as engaging as we do, please show your support. Give us a thumbs up on your favorite podcast platform, share it with your colleagues, and do subscribe to ensure you don't miss out on future episodes. Remember, we're live on Healthcare Now Radio weekdays at 5:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And for our friends on the West Coast, that's 2:30 a.m., 10:30 a.m., and 6:30 p.m. Pacific. From all of us at Pop Health Week, Fred Goldstein and yours truly, Greg Masters, we urge you to stay safe and stay tuned. Until next time, fare thee well.